All right. I'm here in this jungle. I have no memories, no idea what I could possibly do. I guess I'll just start slowly walk. Oh, no, I fell into a pit and died. We're talking about Flashback, the quest for identity. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The More You Nerd, your new favorite podcast. My name is Drew, and we are here today to talk about another game that we feel like we missed out on by not playing it when it was new and fresh. And today we are talking about the 1992, technically for the one we were looking at, 1993 Flashback, The Quest for Identity. But I need the weird monster to my dude that walks around and I don't know what he's wearing. Miles, how are you, my friend?
It's been a week. this was certainly an odd one to do. This is a game, you know, I was very excited to get into because the magazine ads for this game are permanently embedded in my memory. Both the one that you see on the cover of the game typically, but also the actual quest for identity image where it's a little more kind of painted and he's got like this eyepiece on that's got this light that comes out across the image. I mean, any PC magazine, any Game Pro, any nerd themed magazine. And as we've said a couple times this month, you know, we were magazine boys.
Yes.
And I just remember this seeing this image, and it kind of, you know, not inspiring, but like I just felt like this, oh, I have to go on this adventure. It felt like you were going to be on this kind of Blade Runner-esque like cyberpunk adventure that you had to tune into. And I think I rented it one weekend maybe and promptly tossed that cartridge across the room.
Yeah. So again, I told the story at the end of last week's episode, but I am, as I do, going to reiterate, I was on vacation with my family and, you know, we for some reason went into a pawn shop. My family never went into pawn shops. I don't know why we went into a pawn shop this time. But I happened to look down and see this super rad, and I'm gonna copy the image and share it with you, Miles, even though I know you've probably already got it called up. Mm-hmm. I see this in the rack of used games, and it was games to buy. And it was no case, just the cartridge itself. I had no manual, which is going to play a factor in a few minutes.
I don't know if it will or not.
And it was huge. Like, I was like, I have to have this. I want this. And I feel like, you know, it was the 90s. So it was probably like $5 or some ridiculously cheap amount. So my parents ended up getting it for me. And I played it and I put it in the system. I turned it on and was greeted to one of the coolest things I had ever seen. So other games had stuff like this already, but the animation in Flashback was all rotoscoped. It was all just drawn on top of people doing the actions. Like Prince of Persia was an old rotoscoped game. There's a bunch of mm-hmm. games that use rotoscoping. It's an old animation technique. A lot of Disney stuff back in the day used rotoscoping. And it's just this amazing, like, this dude is running down this hallway and he's being shot at by these guys and he hops on to this like space scooter and you see the camera swing around, but it's all done in like this fake 3D effect that just looked so cool and it was so interesting and awesome. And then you're dropped into this jungle and you're walking around and like the frames of animation are so fluid with this dude that is like, again, it looks like he's walking because it was all this rotoscoped animation that had so many frames to it, or felt like it had so many frames to it. And then I proceeded to play that game for about 25 minutes
mm-hmm.
and get to a point where I could do absolutely nothing. And the reason for that is that I didn't have the manual to the game that explained all of the different ways to move the character and do things like long jumps and jumps up ramps and stuff like that. Because if you're used to games like Super Mario or any of the other Sonic the Hedgehog, any of the like, this is like the opposite of Sonic the Hedgehog. This dude barely moves.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And which is a problem with the game in general. And spoiler warning, manual doesn't help that much. like I went through the tutorial. It did not do great for me. But there's other reasons for that. I had a very similar experience as you did. And this is before the any rental place would put like some rental places. I would say maybe around the 16-bit era, moving into more of the PlayStation era, would put key things from the manual on the actual rental box.
I think I know why they started doing that.
They played Flashback?
Metal Gear Solid.
Because I could see that. I think they just started it right before that, but yeah, well, I could definitely see that.
The first, because Metal Gear Solid required, I rented Metal Gear Solid before I bought Metal Gear Solid, I think, or I had some reason that I had the
I played the demo.
I had some reason why I had the box of Metal Gear Solid. But there's a point where you have to use a codec frequency, but the codec frequency exists in a screenshot on the CD case, which Kojima, you dog, I freaking love it. And for people that rented the game, they had no way to get beyond that point because they didn't have the CD case. So they had to start including that information on the Blockbuster rental boxes. And it was after that point that I started noticing a little more of that stuff happening. And sometimes, weirdly, sometimes the Blockbuster would just put the game manual in the rental box. And I'm surprised that I got as many of them as I did, because
many of them got stolen.
Yeah.
The one in my area would put, I remember they, I think maybe it was from the PlayStation era. They did start putting the manuals in there, but they also were like, if you return this without the manual, you will be charged like an X fee. And if my mom was charged a fee, there would be hell to pay. So we made sure we had the manuals in there every single time.
So let's talk about, you and I had basically the
I was so excited when you brought this one up, because it is definitely a missed connection for me. Because yeah, like I said, I mean, I have always thought about the magazine ad for the game and the artwork, and honestly, just the way this game looks is still like, it's really cool looking. It's a really cool looking game, and it's made in a time that when your ambition is far greater than your resources, and you can see that in this game.
Oh yeah. Like this, so this game originally came out. This is by Delphine Software International, which had a pretty long career, but hasn't really done much since like the early 2000s. Their biggest games are arguably Flashback, the Moto Racer series,
which for a time was very popular.
Yeah. And a little game called Shaq Fu.
Shaq Fu, baby. Suffers very similar problems.
Shaq Fu, the Shaquille O'Neal fighting game. Yes, this is a game. And I hope Miles did not pick this for next week. But
I played this game quite a bit, along with Michael Jordan, Trouble in the Windy City. Basketball themed adventure games were a thing back then, but also the basketball stars of yesterday were more plentiful and feel bigger than life. Like, I know we've got LeBron James, but there is something different about.
I think LeBron James is an all-time great, but he's not Michael Jordan. He's not Shaquille O'Neal when it comes to
not them in the 90s, where like, one, the NBA, and again, I understand the NBA is a $1 billion industry, but culturally, like, was a big deal in the 90s.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, anyway, but yeah, there were a lot of wacky basketball themed games back then before Space Jam ever came around.
So Flashback was originally released on the Amiga of all platforms, which is, again, if you remember the 90s and the late 80s and into the 90s, there were a lot of different platforms and there were a lot of computer platforms that just vanished as we moved on. So I'm just going to say some of the places that Flashback appeared on. This list has only grown over time. It initially released on the Amiga, but the main version, the creator of the game, Paul, he's a Frenchman. I do not, Cuisette or Cissette, I don't know how to pronounce his name. I'm sorry. Paul, C-U-I-S-S-E-T, Cuisette, might be Cuisette, I don't know. His primary, he has come out and said that the version of this game is the Mega Drive version, the Sega Genesis version. So Amiga came first.
Which has always felt that way.
Yeah, yeah. Amiga came first. Sega or Mega Drive Genesis came next. But over the years, it got released on the 3DO, the Acorn Archimedes, the Jaguar, the CDI, MS-DOS, Classic Mac OS, the PC-98. There was a Sega CD, Mega CD version. It did come out for the Super Nintendo as well. An operating system called FM Towns, which I had never, ever heard of before.
No.
And later got a version on the Sega Dreamcast as well, before, you know, anniversary editions would come out on modern platforms like the Xbox and the Switch and the PlayStation, which we played the anniversary edition on the PlayStation.
I played it on the Switch.
Oh, you played it on the Switch? Okay. Well, mm-hmm. I could have played it on the Switch and I
yeah. Go ahead and tell that story, bud.
Yeah. So I'm coming downstairs to record this podcast tonight. And my son asked, "Oh, Dad, what are you going to record on your show tonight?" And I was like, "We're talking about this old game called Flashback." He's like, "Oh yeah, I've seen that on the Switch." It's like, "You've seen that on the Switch? I bought it on the PlayStation. When did you see it on the Switch?" He's like, "Yeah, it's got the guy with the glasses on it and the light coming into his head." It's like, I had apparently bought Flashback for the Switch years ago, probably on sale, probably for like $3 or something.
I think it's perennially on sale. Like, I mean, it was $9 when we bought it this past week.
I'm sure I spent even less than that on the Switch version because I wouldn't have bought it for anything like that. And bought it for Switch and never, and completely forgot about it. Yeah, I feel pretty good about it. So to get back to the game itself, let's talk about playing this game, because this is where it's really, really interesting. And I'm going to use this word because I think I think if you come to this game without the right expectations, you're going to feel like this game is slow. But I feel like a better term for it is deliberate. In this game, your default speed is walking.
Yeah.
And when you're talking about a platform game, that might seem weird. But the whole idea behind this game is that every screen, every you know, frame is a puzzle. And it's a puzzle of navigation. And you have to, and so it's not like it's not Sonic the Hedgehog, it's not Super Mario where you're running and jumping and going all over. Your jumps take time. There is fall damage in this game.
Your jumps take time, but they're also like annoying to pull off. Like, I think what the biggest enemy in this game are the controls and the control scheme. While it is very deliberate, like,
I disagree with that being the biggest enemy in the game, but I'll let you
What is it, a little robot?
The biggest enemy in the game to me is that you come across something that you've never seen before in a game.
Well, yes, yeah.
But like a big green beam and you're like, oh, is this a teleporter or something? No, it kills you. And
instantly.
And oh, there's this section where it gives you a little tutorial pop up because we're playing a new version of the game. It's like, here's how you do a combat roll, and you do a combat roll right into green stuff on the ground that instantly kills you. So, which,
very cool animation.
Every bit of animation in this game is super cool. Every bit of it is super, super cool. But it's one of those things where without the instant rewind function that we have with these recent versions of the game, this would have been agonizing to play.
It honestly would have been almost unplayable. And this is one of those things where, like, when I talk about games not holding up, but like this game was, neither of us, I never got past the first or second screen in the original game initially.
Same. Because I didn't know how to long jump. I didn't know how to do the jump ups on cliffs and things.
So there's that. The platforming is, even for the time, very clumsy. And part of that is by design, because they want you to feel like you're in like a film. Like, this whole thing is meant to be cinematic. This is a Kojima-like aspiration before any possibility of doing that is there. And so, like, on that level, I absolutely applaud them for that. And this game was very well received at the time. And I think maybe it might have been a little bit more easier on a PC, because the controls, since this came out on the Amiga, the controls, even on the Switch, felt like, you know, the timing's always like a half beat off.
But there's something to that, because it has a moment where if you hold down a particular button, your character will burst into a run.
Right.
But that run also has momentum behind it. So if you don't stop your run early enough, or if you don't time your jump fast enough, you will fall or you will run into a wall. And all of that, again, is very, very deliberate. It feels like it's one of those things where, like, I couldn't play every game like this. But because it's designed around that kind of thing, there's something interesting about it.
Well, I just because we're only in the jungle, it's the beginning stuff, so there's not like a lot of things coming at you at once. I think if every screen is designed as kind of a puzzle and there's only like one or two enemies on the screen, that's forgivable. If it's paced any differently than that, or if there are like boss fights or something, I don't know how those would really stack up.
I don't believe there are boss fights. I think there are just enemies that take more shots. And that's the other thing about this game, that combat is either super easy or super, super frustrating.
Yes. Which, again, is why I like the rewind function on this, because, like, I don't know how the character is always going to be able to. Also, the control stream is weird. Like, it feels very unnatural to me having to press the X button to, like, draw my weapon and then trigger. But then sometimes, like, I would have the weapon drawn, but then I couldn't jump right right.
Well, that's another thing, because you have a set of movement where you have you don't have your weapon drawn, and you have a set of movement while you do have your weapon drawn. And it's also, again, and this is intentional, but it's weird. There is not the button to jump is just up on your D-pad or your control stick or whatever you did. I could not use a control stick to control this game. I had to use a D-pad to control this game.
Trying this with a control stick is a fool's errand.
It didn't work for me. So it's like, okay, you walk forward and backwards, and that's a walk. If you hold X or A or whatever your bottom button on your controller now, that's the run button, and you run back and forth. Okay. But if you stand on a ledge and you hold that like speed button down and you press up, instead of jumping up, you do a long jump.
so it's obnoxious. And I think I do have a problem. Like, it's interesting that the movements themselves are the puzzle, because the quote unquote puzzle of the game is, frankly, like, at least in this level, like, elementary, because there's not much to really puzzle out in the first little bit until a certain point, because like it takes more time for me to like, oh, I need to get here, 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 and here, and I got to figure out how this dipstick can move there. more than like if I was playing any other character in any other game, like no problem, none whatsoever. But the movements themselves, I feel like that's the puzzle.
But it's also something to say where like, because you go through a lot of the same screens over and over again as you're going back and forth and sort of a, I don't want to say it's like a Metroidvania because it's not. But
no, because you there is back and forth, but
it's back.
You're supposed to progress,
but it's back and forth through like four or five screens and not right. The entire map itself.
Right.
But as I was going back and forth these couple of screens, because I went to go look for something that I couldn't find, because that's another thing about this game. There's stuff on the ground that isn't obvious that it's on the ground.
No, and half of it like is like under a blade of grass, and in this game a blade of grass takes up a lot more space, and like you can easily miss stuff.
Yeah, which again we will say the backgrounds of this game, especially in the jungle level, very, very interesting, very cool looking.
Oh yeah, I mean, again, art direction, even the way the goofer moves is like you can tell that like everything was supposed to like feel like you were controlling a real person. You weren't controlling a Mario or a Sonic the Hedgehog or, you know, a cartoon character. You were supposed to. There was a weight. And this is something that happened in a lot of Genesis games, including the Castlevania game that's out there for it. There's a weight to a lot of the Genesis games and how they played. And that's certainly present here as well. But the way he moves, the animation for that is great. Anytime it slips into its 16-bit kind of like animation, like when you get fried or when something happens.
Well, that's another thing.
Or when you find something, you know,
other than a stone that you pick up that you can use to distract enemies and things like that, everything you pick up has this super cool fake 3D like little clip to it.
It's like MS Paint looking almost.
it's really cool. It's also like, I don't need this. I would like to just pick it up and have it pop up on the screen.
Yes. And this also includes anytime you charge something like your shields, because that's kind of what connotes what you can, the amount of times you can get hit. Shield holds like five charges, and there's a handful of charging stations in the level, and every single time you charge your shield back up, you get the little I have to, and now it's not as obnoxious of not being able to skip through a cutscene, say in Onimusha, but you do have the little I'm gonna place this in here.
You get the Duracell battery commercial.
Frankly, that one didn't, at least the bit I played, did not wear out its welcome to me. It's when like the game is purposefully obtuse in a way that I don't think, even from a puzzle standpoint, is really works for me. There is a bit, you and I both kind of stopped at the exact same spot.
We did. And I have a big question for you, Miles, because I ended up looking into some things and watching a gameplay video of this section of the game to see where we went wrong. Did you encounter the guy injured in the jungle that tasks you to find a teleporter?
No, but I found the teleporter.
Okay. Well, I did. I encountered this guy again, because this is a game that, though it is relatively linear, there's like an A path, like there's multiple paths to get through to get to the same point. And at one point you find two doors that are locked. And so you go through all this trouble and you randomly find in the middle of the ground between two turrets shooting at you, a key card. And you're like, okay, now I can get through it. And so you run back to that door and you open the one door and you're like, all right, here we go. And you go to the second door and you don't have the key card anymore because you used it on the first door.
Womp, womp.
Womp, womp. So I came across this dude earlier, like 20 minutes earlier in this level. And He was hurt. He had been injured by mutants. And he's like, I need you to find my teleporter. So I went and looked for the teleporter, and I found the teleporter, and I took it back to him. And he teleported away. And it's like, awesome. That's great. I'm trying to get to the city, though. Why couldn't I have used that teleporter to go right to the city? Whatever. Doesn't matter. But
I tried to use a teleporter. So I don't know if I came across him or not. Or it certainly didn't hit anything to like to jumpstart a conversation. But well, I did find the teleporter.
Well, when you bring him that teleporter, he teleports away. And either So this is where I don't know the game. I don't think I found anything on the ground underneath him, because I looked, because I was like, surely I will get a reward for this. But I didn't. And so I walked away and did other things and got to this second door that I couldn't get to. Well, this gameplay video that I was watching, wouldn't you know it, that guy, when he teleports away, drops an ID that you pick up, and that gets you through the second door. And right after the second door is basically the end of the level. Where
damn it. That's so obnoxious.
So yeah,
we were so close.
We were so close. And yet so far.
And I had even gone around uploaded my save, because when I got the card, I went back to save, because you can, you know, get back to the starting point. And so I was like, okay, well, I won't open that door. I'll open the second door, and boom. Nope. That key only works on that door.
So again, we're talking about the 90s, and we're talking about a game that, you know, might have cost $50, might have cost $60, might have cost $70 or $80 in some of these console prices. Prices were wild back then. And yeah. I reflected upon this with Miles off air, talking about, this is like 2D Myst. Mm-hmm. In that it doesn't tell you anything, and it just expects you to be okay with dying in a frustrated way to teach you how to play the game. Because yes. and going back and just searching and exploring and trying to find stuff and being okay with that being how the game progresses. And that is something that is in 2024. not the most interesting way to play a game, but I don't want to discount this game, because I feel like had I known how to control the game back then, it's like last week talking about Onimusha, we talked about tank controls and how I was good at tank controls back in 1997, but I am terrible at them now. As I went back and forth through these same screens and knowing how to get through them, I was finding my way and getting the rhythm of how the game works down. It was just to the point of frustration where I didn't have this thing and I had nothing pointing me to it, because I don't think the thing that I was supposed to pick up spawned until after I found the doors, and I'm just frustrated at that, you know?
Yeah, and again, we are certainly looking at this as 90s kids, and then from a 2024, you know, we've evolved with our gameplay. So some certain styles of gameplay, when this was brand new, and if I had the tools, I probably would have maneuvered it a little bit better, just not having known, and I probably would have. I mean, this game was like critically lauded when it came out. Like, this game got fantastic reviews. Computer Gaming World loved the graphics. They called it superbly rotoscoped graphics, fluid movement, and sound card audio. And I guess, you know, the movement, again, if I'm thinking about the time period, because I'm thinking in terms of like a platformer as opposed to a puzzle game. This is really more of a cinematic puzzle game.
Well, and the Wikipedia calls this genre cinematic platformer, which is extremely pretentious but also pretty apt.
it is, and I want to see what else they have on here. It's like Dragon's Lair. Okay, that tracks. But also like Inside and Limbo and the Little Nightmare games, as well as the original Prince of Persia, which we mentioned before, and the Oddworld games, as well as a handful of other ones. And I mean, again, across the board, you know, people were really, really taken by the graphics of this game, the way the game looked, the art style. Many of them praised the cinematic quality. Like I think that's the thing, is like the game does make you feel like you're playing kind of a mature adventure.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, that is something that always caught my imagination about this game.
If you watch gameplay video of someone who actually knows what they're doing in this game, it is impressive.
It is. And I mean, like EGM gave the game 8.25 out of 10. It even got a score in Entertainment Weekly, you know, like a B. And across the board, the game's like visual style and story sequences and the kind of plot itself have been praised. Some people Nintendo Power said that while the graphic story and animation are, you know, cinematic, the controls, quote, take some getting used to, which I'm with you, Nintendo Power. We're certainly not dogging on this game, but I do think like you have to put yourself in a time and a place, and not only that, but like I think behooves you to really spend some time like at the beginning of the game with the control scheme and kind of almost going through a training program of sorts, because you know, with the way that games have evolved since then, this game can be very, very difficult to kind of get your head around in terms of how it controls, because it doesn't control like a narrative game that we, as we understand it going forward. But at the same time, like I said, this game has so much ambition. Like it's really impressive in that department.
Totally. And that, so one thing I'll say about that is that the different versions that came out, specifically like the CDI and 3DO and Sega CD versions of the game, they swap out some of the what Miles and I consider super cool faux 3D effects for actual CG FMV that would have been a breaking edge at the time.
Oh yeah.
And I've watched some of those clips. I don't like them as much. I think they are less than. I think that the cool Sega Genesis version and which is thankfully the version that exists in the remakes that we played. I just like it.
I fully agree with you. That said, the Sega CD sequences are still pretty cool. If I saw them at the time, it would have blown my little mind.
Fair. If I had seen those at the time, I'd have been like, I've got to get a Sega CD. But yeah, I think today I weirdly prefer the more retro fake.
It has such a personality to it. And an intention. And it's not that the CGI or the attempt at CGI in the Sega CD version is any is bad necessarily. It's just that there is a true, like, that felt like something that someone else kind of concocted and put in. It doesn't really feel like it's aligned with the vision of the rest of the game. Whereas the kind of rotoscoped, almost MS Paint looking animated sequences, like, just, I don't know, there's something scrappy about it.
Because they do more than you expected of them at the time. Because they move in fake 3D space. Like the opening when that little space scooter, that little Scooty Puff Jr. he's driving, just sort of like pans around and then moves out. Like, it's all something you could do with animation. But also, we didn't get full animation in console games. That's another thing we have to respect. We got a lot of still images in this stuff. This was an in-engine cutscene before in-engine cutscenes existed. And super cool. I liked it a lot. I wish that I had the desire to continue to play this game.
I have a desire to watch a playthrough of it. Yes. I do.
I don't have the patience to play this game. And I hate that because I was like,
no, I'm with you, bud.
It's like, when I was doing well in this game, I was really getting into it. But then I just hit these roadblocks that were just such, I don't have the time for this energy. And it's
one. I love that you have infinite ammo. That helps a lot.
I love that you have infinite ammo.
Also, the animation of you walking around with your gun held out looks like every like kind of old video game piece of artwork with where you had like a like what was that Kojima game?
Metal Gear.
No.
But again, in between, it's funny that you say Kojima game because I look at that and it's like. That's what Solid Snake would look like in Metal Gear 2 if he was sneaking around like that, if they had the capability at the time.
Oh, for sure.
Are you thinking of Snatcher or Police Knots?
Yes. Yeah. The typical where you have the guy with the hand, like the right hand's kind of up in an L shape, the gun's up pointing towards this guy in like a right angle. And he does that like kind of like noir, like kind of cyberpunk noirish thing where he like, has the coat kicked back and he's got the gun up. It's and he goes very, real very cool.
Slow, looking. Like his back's against the wall.
Like it's cool. I cannot stress enough. Like cool. What a cool style this game has. Like it looks so cool. But yeah, I also do not have the patience. And I mean, this is what I do love about going to some of these games, because yeah, there are some games that you're going to respect and not quite connect with in terms of playing it. And, you know, because this game has its accolades. It was placed on many lists. I think at one point it may still be on the Guinness World Records as the best selling French game of all time. I don't know if that's changed since Quantic Dream has entered the table, but
or Ubisoft doing anything.
Are they technically strictly a French company?
Pretty sure Ubisoft's French. I think their offices are in France and Montreal.
Ah, well, French speaking at least. I think that I would definitely say if you have an interest, especially in kind of game history, game preservation, and just kind of the academic, like seeing some of how where we've come from, this is definitely a game that bears some investigation. Maybe you have more patience and more skill than we did, but it is certainly a game worth checking out because it is a visual treat. I would have loved to have got more into the story. This game did get a sequel and apparently a well-received one called Fade to Black for the PlayStation and the Dreamcast, as well as the PC with MS-DOS system.
That I've heard good things about Fade to Black. I have not.
I have too. It's not my choice for next week. But I saw that. I'm like,
I have heard that the recent Flashback 2 from 2021 is awful.
Awful. Awful. No, so that was called one of the worst games of 2023. And then the actual remake of Flashback, which I don't think maybe Homeboy was involved with that, but
interesting enough, it was published by Ubisoft, which is hilarious.
Yes. And honestly, it looks like every generic Ubisoft game. Like if you said that was a sequel to Prototype, I'm like, oh yeah, it looks like it.
Yeah, that was 2013 that game came out in. But
oh yeah, so the original game designer did do the have a say in the remake, and certainly did make Flashback 2, which is in fact a prequel. But from all across the board, it is Metacritic score is 37, the PC score is 30. It got pretty torn apart across the board, and I'm sorry, the second worst game of 2023. with the first being Lord of the Rings Gollum.
God, I forgot about that game. We're not covering that next week, please. But yeah, Flashback. Final thoughts from me. I do believe this is one, and part of the reason why we chose this, that had I experienced it back then, I would have it with the full breadth of knowledge of how to actually play it. I think I would have spent a lot of time with it, but today it just doesn't quite. There's too many 2024 frustrations for me to spend too much more time with it.
Yeah, I co-signed. I fully agree. I wish I didn't, because this game is damn good looking. It's very, very cool. It is a very, very cool game.
There's something about old school rotoscoping graphics. It's so cool. Ah, I love it. Anyway, all right, Miles, you have picked next week's game, and I do not know what it is.
That's true.
Lay it on me.
So this will probably be the most mainstream of games that we get. As some listeners may know, I think as Drew does know, when I was younger, I did not have a Super Nintendo growing up. I was a Sega kid. I had a Sega Genesis, and I had I did have an N64, but like I chose Sega as a kid. We had the option of doing one or the other. We went that way and stayed with Sega until I owned every Sega console ever made. But as a result, there's a lot of games I didn't get to. I didn't play Chrono Trigger until I was elder in high school, and that was emulated. Same with Final Fantasy 3/6. So
I know it's not those two. No, it's
we've
not
done
one of
those two for this podcast before. We've definitely done Chrono Trigger. In fact, I think you did it as a birthday challenge one year.
I don't remember that, but I also don't remember most of my birthday.
I can promise you, because the reason I most recently played it was because of you. But there is one game that has, at least retroactively, and I think at the time it was very well received as well, that I have never played. And it is a very, very popular franchise. And it's something that a lot of people like recall very fondly. And I always kind of nod along, because I played, you know, follow-ups and, you know, things that kind of went off some ideas, but I never played the actual game. And so I was like, well, you know what? Let me make sure this is readily available. It is. It's on the SNES Switch Online. And so for next week, we're going to play Super Mario World 2 Yoshi's Island, because I have never played it.
I was out here mouthing for Miles to see Donkey Kong Country, Donkey Kong Country, Donkey Kong Country.
No, the weird thing is, so I did have a buddy, because I mean, a lot of times when you chose one of the consoles, you typically had a friend that had the other.
You always had a friend who had the other one, yeah.
And he had, like, they were a Donkey Kong Country family. They loved Donkey Kong Country. So I played every one of those back in the day. And I had played Mario World, but I had never played Yoshi's Island.
So here's a hot take. I haven't played Yoshi's Island either.
Because
at the time it came out, I was like, baby Mario, baby Luigi.
But I hear it's such a phenomenal platformer.
It also came out at a time, I feel like the PlayStation was out and in my house already. And I was like,
yeah, well, that and like Sega's marketing worked, where it's like, you know, Sega's whole marketing was like, oh, we're for the older kids, we're for the cooler kids. And but by making a sequel with a baby Mario, a lot of us were like, nah, I don't want to play that. I'm going to go play, you know, Crash Bandicoot.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm sorry. I'm going to play Sonic and Knuckles. He's an echidna, which I only learned what that was thanks to Encyclopedia Britannica.
Right. But he punches things.
But he punches things. He's got spikes in his glove. I'm sorry that he's not a baby Mario.
Yeah. Your move, Grandma.
So I am excited, because I have heard good things about this game. In the past 40 years. 50 years, 70, 30, 30, years.
30, 30 years. 30 but years. No, I've always heard very, very strong things. And like, I had always thought they were talking about Yoshi's Island, the N64 game, or Yoshi's Story, which is a very, like, it's a sequel to this, but it's a very easy game. We had it. I was always like, why is everyone talking about this game? Like, yeah, it's cute, but like, it's kind of boring. Like, you just get more colored Yoshis, and that's fine. But like, apparently Yoshi's Island, the actual Yoshi's Island, Super Mario World 2, apparently it's an amazing platformer, and I'm really excited to try it out, because I love the Mario games.
Yeah, and I was never really a Mario kid growing up. I know I've had Nintendo consoles, and I play the Mario game I have probably played the absolute most is Super Mario Land 2, Secret of the Golden Coins.
It's a good game.
Which I believe
had them great commercials.
I believe we talked about that.
Wario.
Yeah, that was the introduction of Wario, which is absolutely wild. But
no, I'm a big fan of the Super Mario Land games in general.
Super Mario Land is tough to go back to. But Land 2 nails a lot more of the Mario stuff. Anyway,
I have fond memories of both.
But yeah, all right. I'm excited about this. Let's get to it. We'll fire up our Switches because it's on Nintendo Switch online.
I made sure before we start recording to make sure it was on there.
How could it not be? But
you'd be surprised, Nintendo. You'd be
surprised, Nintendo. All right. So with that said, gang, this is where we're going to wrap it up. If you would like to reach out to us, you can find us at themoreyounerd.com, which has this and every other episode going back almost, 13 years. We're past the 13-year mark now. Wow. Lucky crazy number. Very crazy. I always know because I started this podcast when my wife was pregnant with my son and he turns 13. In just over a month. Oh my god, I'm so old. Anyway,
he's about to be a teenager. I thought he was 11.
No, he's about to turn 13.
Man, and Matt, once upon a time there was a poll to name the child the Goblin King, and it's been so long.
Yeah, the Goblin King is approaching his reign.
soon I will be podcasting with him and you will have been taken, you know, out to pasture.
Yeah, I'll be a ghost haunting the house. So themoreyounerd.com, you can go to Blue Sky and search for The More You Nerd. bluesky.com at The More You Nerd.
After like 2 years, we finally started posting on Blue Sky.
I wonder why we're suddenly all on Blue Sky.
No
weird
idea.
You know, if you come back to this in 10 years, you know, I wonder if there's a specific reason why we're suddenly on Blue Sky. You can also facebook.com/themoreyounerd, and you can email us themoreyounerd@gmail.com. That's themoreyounerd@gmail.com. And you can check out our other show, because me and Miles and all of our friends are on a show called Cosmic Crit, which is a tabletop RPG podcast using the Starfinder game rules by Paizo, makers of Pathfinder. It's like D&D, but in space with cool sci-fi magic stuff. And you can find that at CosmicCrit.com. And if you go to CosmicCrit.com, you can also look in the upper right-hand corner. You'll find a link to the Cosmic Crit Discord. And if you join that Discord, you could talk to me and Miles all day while we are bored at work. So with that said, gang, we are now going to end the show as we always do with a rousing
Nerd out. Too nerd for y'all.